Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am your host, Kate Romero, and I want to give my gratitude to Don Newsome and Seth Hendrick over at BBS Radio for just giving us this wonderful platform to raise consciousness by using Hollywood. I've been very much anticipating tonight's guest to be on the show with us. If you haven't heard of this guy before, you're never going to forget him after you hear our interview tonight. His name is Dave Pelzer, and if you go to www.davepelzer.com, that's DavePelzer.com, you pull that up and you'll get an idea of who it is that we're talking with. And I'm just going to give you a bit of his background. I have personally read 5 of Dave's books, and I know he has another one I haven't read yet, which I will be reading. As a child, Dave Pelzer endured the horrors of child abuse. Upon his rescue, he was identified as one of the most severely abused children in California's history. He was made a ward of the court and placed in foster care until he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force at age 18. He was handpicked to refuel in midair, highly secretive planes during Operations Just Cause, Desert Shield, and Desert Storm. His many subsequent distinctive accomplishments have been recognized through a number of awards as well as personal commendations, including being the only American in 1994 honored as one of the outstanding young persons of the world. He is the author of 6 inspirational books, including his first book, A Child Called It, from 1993, on the New York Times bestseller list for 6 years, and his most recent, Help Yourself for Teens, and both Pulitzer Prize nominees. When not on the road more than 250 days of the year, offering programs for corporate groups, human services, and youth at risk, Mr. Pelzer lives in California. And I just want to say, after reading A Child Called It, I just had to have Dave on our show this evening. Without further ado, I'd like to bring on Dave Pelzer. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. And one thing I want to say up front to our listeners is your message is about resilience. Your message is not about emotional baggage, hanging on, being a life sentence because you were raised a certain way. Your message is about resilience and the human spirit and managing to get past the atrocities that happen to us in life and turn them into a way to help others heal. Have I got that correct?
Perfectly, because you know what the amazing thing is, and we're kind of living history today as we speak.
Oh, yes.
Is that everybody has a situation, everybody has a story, everybody has what I call a challenge. I think for the last maybe 10, 15, 20 years, somebody owes me something, it's not my fault, or my parents divorced, high tide, solar eclipse, or they forget the term, I have a dream, that we can inspire to do better, that there are challenges, and when we face them head on, they may not come to the outcome that we want right now, but we're better because of the said challenge. And mm-hmm. I believe as an American, as a patriot, 3 to 5 years from now, we'll look back at 2008 and 2009 saying those were hard times. We ate a lot of hamburger helper, but we're better now. Mm-hmm. We don't need 5 iPods per room. Mm-hmm. And we don't need HD DVD in every single house, whatever. But the fact that, you know, what is important to you? The fact that you're healthy, you're happy, and you live through the challenge. I never saw myself as a victim. I just did what I had to do.
Yeah, I know that completely. Your book was recommended by Dr. Jolene Jaffe, who's a brilliant woman who wrote the book, co-wrote it, Emotional Intelligence.
Yes.
And I immediately went and bought every single one of your books that I could find available and read them like I've never read anything before. I think that we read all of your books within a couple of weeks. And these are page turners. I don't normally wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and put on my reading lamp and start reading because I just couldn't put it down. And I did those things with your books. What is really just amazing to me is how one of the highest abusive points in your relationship with who you call the mother, and we'd like to speak of her with dignity, of course, because she was just on her path and that's what she did, and not to make her wrong. She put your arm on a gas stove and burned your arm and hand, and then wanted to lay you on top of the gas stove and turn on all the burners and just burn you all up. And what you did was you found a way to manipulate her, distract her, keep her from actually doing that act, and did something instead to cause her to beat you instead of put you on the gas stove. Then your brother came home unexpectedly and she threw you down the stairs. and at the end of the stairs you felt the blisters on your hand and the blisters on your arm, and you never felt more alive, and said, okay, now I know that I can survive anything, because how I behaved up there caused my mother to take a different tact with me. I could be dead right now, and because of my fast thinking, I am not dead, and I'm here right now and still alive, and I know that I can overcome anything. Is that true?
Well, I mean, I think for me that was the pivotal turning point in my life, because what amazes me is that people are amazed. I'm going, well, you know, single moms do this. Economically, you have to work three or four jobs and take the bus. You just do what you have to do. You have to cowboy up, or, you know, as Clint Eastwood character says in Gran Torino, you got to man up a little bit. And,
yeah.
And I was, and kids think in concrete, black and white terms.
Yes.
And for me, I just remember thinking, if I can overcome that,
mm-hmm.
then I can overcome something that's not so much of an atrocity.
Yeah.
It's almost like right now, if we can overcome our economic woes as we get a little bit more money or more steadfast in our convictions, it is going to get a little bit better. And that's what you have to do. It's you just have to really have faith that you can get through this. And a lot of people right now, because I have a radio show too, and I haven't gotten my check from President Obama. Well, he's only been in office for 3 hours. I think he wants you to do something for yourself.
Yeah.
You see, you raise your kids to cross the street by themselves. You raise children to be functional adults. And anybody, whether it's a divorce or cancer, I mean, I've never met anybody that says, I'm a victim of cancer. They say, I'm surviving the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fighting the cancer. It's always about a certain mindset that you do what you have to do. You have faith. And the thing is, you have to follow through every single day. The kids have to study for school every single day. I have to go to work every single day. I have to pay my taxes. You have to commit to doing this every single day. And some people think, well, I studied for the test. I got like a B. Okay, I showed up for school half the time, but I deserve an A. No, no, no. I don't care about, you see, as a former commando, they have a lesson for us. The instructors say, guess what, buttheads? The only easy day was yesterday. Cowboy up every single day. And I think right now, America is learning that lesson. Every day counts.
Mm-hmm.
You have a problem in your relationship, you want more hubba-hubba in your relationship, give your significant other a 10-second kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk. Weapons released with the hands, a 10-second kiss.
Mm-hmm.
You have a problem with your children, you have a problem with them.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a 30-second hug, tell them what the standard is, and back them up and tell them how much you're proud of them you are and how much you support them every single day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's all I had to do.
Uh-huh.
I ate out of garbage cans. If my mom beat me up, I would tighten up parts of my body. It was like a game of chess. You just
mm-hmm.
have to think ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think in an awkward sense, because you look at, you can do studies, and sometimes kids that come from abusive backgrounds or broken backgrounds, if they're really steadfast, they excel.
Mm-hmm.
They excel. I mean, why do you think there's people like Arnie Schwarzenegger, Oprah Winfrey, Lance Armstrong, Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
you know, or people, I don't want to say like me, but, I mean, I was profiled at age 14. I was in foster care for about a year and a half. And this crazy doctor says there's no way he's going to make it. The abuse
mm-hmm.
is so traumatic. There's no way he can adjust. He can't talk. He can't walk upright. He doesn't look anybody in the eyes. And this crazy doctor says by the time I was 18, death or prison, because there's no way he can adjust. I remember thinking, well, if I can go through all that stuff I did without any help or training, without a Phil Jackson, without the aid of others, I think I can maybe muster through. And that's why I think I excelled in the military. I kind of have a weird work ethic. I still work like 60 to 80 hours a week, and you know. But when on my downtime, I'm learning to relax.
It's Yay!
Like, look at your radio show. You're very passionate about what you do, and I think a lot of people lack passion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And Dave, you know, one of the things that right away, let me just tell you that when I read A Child Called It, I was vindicated. I mean,
yes.
gave me more freedom than 15 years of group counseling or whatever, because, you know, my path was very much like your path, and I call it a spiritual contract that I agreed to before I was born, and that all the players in that spiritual contract played their roles absolutely flawlessly, and, you know, to make them wrong would be a breach of that contract. So I, rather than make those people wrong who did the things to me that they did, I see it as what I signed up for before I was born, and it was to make me stronger. It was to bring out my passion, because I don't know if I'd had a cushy life growing up if I would be so passionate about awakening the world to their greatness and to
why
they're here.
What you're doing, because you're on a campaign, you're on a mission. Some people have jobs, know, I believe in a mission or the campaign. And again, you can do what you can stick your head in the sand and hope that you get help, or you can point that finger. But there comes a time in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I mean, and I do this all the time. People come up and say, Dave, 50 years ago, I was abused. I'm going, okay, Jethro, you're 60, and this happened at age 10. Oh, my God, you wasted all that time and energy and love. Oh, my God, and that was only for 10 minutes.
Right.
And people, I mean, look at our good friend Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
This week on the cover of Time magazine, and he says, get off your butt and fight.
Yeah.
Fight for something you believe in. He says, I'm not fighting for the film. Mm-hmm. I'm fighting to be with my wife. I'm fighting for my life. And if God takes me home tomorrow, at least I had an extra day. And those are the people. Look at Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
And again, it's always about these inspirational stories, and hopefully we can draw from it. And you know what? I don't really need to talk about divorce that much. Let me go to counseling. You know what? I can't study for 5 extra minutes on this test. Or when I used to run in the Air Force, I used to run from pole to pole, an eighth of a mile away. Okay, I can do an extra eighth. I can do this. I can do that. So you have to be steadfast. You have to have faith it's going to get better. And again, you know, at the same time, too, if you can help others along the way, because that's what the president basically said today. He says, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not going to save you. It's going to take some time, but we're all going to have to cowboy up and do what we can to help ourselves and our fellow man.
Yep, yep. And 60 years ago, his own father wouldn't be served a meal in Washington because of segregation, and today we have an Afro-American president, and I couldn't be more pleased.
And I got to tell you, I saw the president and his family walk in the White House. The first thing he did, he extended a hand to a black man, and I was thinking this, and I don't want to offend, but, you know, we have African-American servants in the White House and Filipino servants, and can you imagine being an African-American servant and saying, Mr. President, God bless you? I mean, the inspiration across the board is amazing, and that inspires me, you, and everybody to cowboy up, man up, and do something for our fellow man, because I think the days of greed, the Donald Trump, look how much I've screwed people over, and I have hundreds of billions of dollars. No, because I think in a time of crisis, you find out what you're made of. We have a gentleman that just fled to Switzerland this last week, $50 billion. We have another gentleman, I'm going to take up a fundraiser, Mr. Madoff, holed up in his hotel suite of $7 million in Manhattan, another $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, you know what, I screwed up, I own up, let's do something right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a time that you really want to find out what you're made of and what is important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy.
Mm-hmm.
If I can give two words of advice for people, be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy now. Be happy now. Darn it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need. As long as you work hard and you're happy with your kids, or you're happy with that little DVD, you know what? You'll be happier if you get another DVD. But is there some people that are just never, ever satisfied?
Oh, I know it. That's for sure. And there's one thing that I noticed today in watching the inauguration and reading a story about Barack Obama and his issue with smoking. I am a militant non-smoker. I believe that anybody who is lighting a cigarette is killing themselves. And to have a president who is grappling with that addiction, he has an absolutely wonderful opportunity to be the poster child for giving up smoking. He could have a national or international smokeout for a month and cause half the country to give up smoking. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. He has that kind of power. He has our love. He has our affection. He has our attention. And what he could do with that alone, rather than say, oh, well, I'm down to 3 or 4 cigarettes a day, he could actually take up a campaign to cause, you know, it's just epidemic, the cigarette smoking. And I know that may not seem like an important thing on the heels of we've got this great president with this brand new opportunity to change the world, and to, because the world has changed, he's planning to make sure that we change with it. So part of that change is to give up smoking, to get people to put down the cigarettes and start feeling their feelings, because, you know, an addiction is an addiction, and it is to numb yourself. And what our president has an opportunity to do, amongst many, 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 many other things, is to help everybody realize that they don't need to do that to themselves. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it starts with the small things. You know, but my job right now is to make sure that we have food on the table, we don't get bombed every day, and, you know, just keep our homes in order. But, you know, it starts with the small things, definitely. And if that's what the president wants to do, also, you know what, my thing is this. I'm a conservative. I voted for the man. I support the man. And you know what, I'm just so optimistic about where this country and the world, because if you look at the news in CNN, from Yemen to Pakistan, even Iran, I mean, there's definitely a change,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it starts with the small steps.
It does. And, you know, to have an example, I mean, the reason I bring up the cigarette smoking is for some people, quitting heroin is easier than to quit smoking. And to see our president have the strength to give up smoking just increases our belief in him. So I'm just really excited that he has this opportunity to do that in front of all of us. And he's really making an effort. So it's absolutely thrilling to be able to talk to you on the day of the inauguration and to have this discussion about change and resilience. And Barack Obama said when he was a young boy that he would be president. And I also know that when you were young, you knew that you would overcome. You knew that you would be able to prove to people and show the world that you are a good person, that you do matter, and that you are somebody.
Well,
and
at the same time, too, I have to say this is, one, there's a lot of luck. There's a lot of luck involved. And, two, I do say this carefully. I believe I'm one of the most blessed individuals I know. Now, I say that as a caveat, that God or my higher power has shined on me, has blessed me. Now, I'll say this. I didn't really start and learn to communicate until I was 14. I stand in front of a mirror for a half an hour learning to pronunciate words. That's why I think I got into comedy to do impressions. I was 14, 15, learning how to tie my shoes. It would take me a half hour here or there. Or the fact that I was very steadfast in my convictions. So there's a lot of luck involved. And whether it's your book does well or the president that puts his arm around you and says, you're a great American, going, oh, my gosh. But at the same time, too, I think it's what you do with your luck, whether it's finances or you're blessed, you know, you got an extra meal there, you can hand it out to someone, or you have $20 and you can give someone $5 of that. I mean, I really think of the whole karma thing about what you do with your luck. And this is why, again, I say this over and over because I got a radio show myself. In a time of crisis, you're going to find out exactly who you are, because there's people, they're married and they're divorcing, they're running off to different countries, they're not paying their taxes, or you have people, with all due respect, and I hate to say this, you have people in the adult entertainment business that are asking the government for $5 billion. Why? I just thought I'd ask. Now, how stupid is that?
Very stupid. I was just talking about
whatever.
That today. It's just immature and
well,
but
I think
if
the
people
word
would
is,
just focus
pardon
on
my language, it's just darn right asinine, because I look at it this way. I have no respect for someone that overextended themselves. They have 4 or 5 homes, and they deliberately took advantage of people that they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
I have respect for someone that doesn't have the best of educations, but gets her butt up to 3 a.m. to take 3 or 4 buses at a menial job, and she does the best she can, scrubbing floors or scrubbing, you know, whatever it is. And that's the person I think America needs to look at, and they're the ones that need an assistance, or at least they need our praise. It's almost like 9/11. 9/11 really woke us up to the core. We pay more respect to our military members, our firemen, our civil servants, our police officers, as we always should.
Mm-hmm.
If every time I eat, it's a blessing. Every time I get put on my glasses, it's a blessing, because I almost killed. At age 12, I was rescued. I weighed 68 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I am so, so lucky. That's why I think, like you say, now, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your mission? I can do anything I want, but I believe in the mission. I travel. I go to Iraq. I do work with the armed forces. I do comedy. I do counseling. You know, we write pretty good books. We have a pretty good radio show. You just do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. And your radio show is Friday morning at 10 a.m., correct?
Yes, ma'am. Pacific time, or they can download the archives on our website if they want.
Mm-hmm. And that's DaveSpilzer.com.
I'm proud to say we broadcast the show live from Baghdad this last year.
Oh, fantastic. It's DaveSpilzer.com.
Yeah. I'm kind of like Jack Bauer meets Mr. Magoo.
That's funny. Okay, so I know that you were passed over at least one time in the Air Force for refueling the jets midair, the secret airplanes midair. I don't
mm-hmm.
know what to call them technically. And, you know, the sergeant did his best for you, and because of some technical thing in the paperwork, you had to wait your turn again. And I don't know if it happened to you once or twice.
It happened like once or twice, and part of it is like when you're in any bureaucracy, papers go the wrong way. My enlistment was almost up. I kind of made a deal that, okay, I'll extend, but by the time the paperwork, and you have to look at the whole thing about timing. Particularly, I believe this, I'm 48, and the older I get, the more I look for the signs of timing, whether it's a relationship or a business deal or, you know, you're 5 seconds late, and you really don't have to fight it in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was a young man, and I remember the story. I was with my friend Roger Rodriguez, and we had an adult libation at the bar, and he says, Pels, man, that's it. Your paperwork got lost. It's your last time you're going to have to out-process. And I remember as low as I felt, I just felt this energy. I said, you know what? I'm going to do it, and next time it's going to work, it's going to work. And lo and behold, I mean, here I am, a guy that can't even tie his shoes a few years ago, can't talk, I have no coordination, and I'm mid-air refueling the SR-71 spy plane, super top secret.
Right.
Years later, I was a mid-air refueler for the stealth fighter, super duper top secret.
Mm-hmm.
Or here's a kid, the worst case of child abuse, and you know, you get lauded by a president, or you get in a little accolade, or I couldn't communicate, now you can't shut me up. I mean, when Schwarzenegger wants to run for office, I'm the guy that does the Arnold Schwarzenegger info commercials. California is in the state of the disrepair, and Governor Davis is ready to stray. So when you vote Arnold and join Arnold together, we'll do the total recall. Get out.
That's
so it's
right.
What you do with your blessing.
Yeah. Well, you've done quite a bit with your blessings, and, you know, I believe that, for me anyway, it felt like I was born a grown-up and now I'm getting to be a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The older you, I'm 48. I love being a kid.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're abused, you don't have spontaneity like a child.
Oh, yeah, because you're at the point, too, where the kids were kind of raised. You're in the groove, you know, you're in with the marriage, you're in the relationship. And you know what? What are you going to do? You can't run around trying to please mom and dad.
No.
Or get the approval of others. I know who I am, and day by day, I get more comfortable in my skin. And I believe that's a ball, that's a strike. And, you know, it's an amazing lesson here. I'm going to go on a riff here, audience. Last week, we had a blessing. I said in the radio show, if you don't believe in God, or Allah, or Bula, or Zen, or Ben, or whatever it is, you better wake up. That flight, 1549, was a blessing as a former aircrew member, as a former loadmaster and pack specialist. That thing was a blessing. One point I'll take up here is this. One man stood up when they started the evac, to evacuate the aircraft. He stopped and said something, and I quote, women and children first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say that because when I go to some places of this great nation of Oz, I got critiqued, and pardon me for swearing, ma'am, I said the word ladies in Seattle. Almost caused a riot.
Mm.
I had one lady jump up and point a finger, and oh, my gosh, she almost had a heart attack.
Mm.
And then 2 years later, back in Seattle, pardon me for swearing again, I said the words, God bless, 6 times in 90 minutes. Now, can you imagine if that plane went down in Seattle? The mantra would have been, every man for himself.
Mm.
So point being, manners matters.
Mm-hmm.
Character matters.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in a time of crisis, a pilot knows how to land.
Mm-hmm. No, we're that was a great
today about
example.
The flight attendants.
Yeah.
Everybody did their job as perfectly as they could, and they were selfless.
Well, I heard them say that the crew and the pilot earned their life's earnings on that one day alone.
Definitely.
Just by the way they all behaved and how it all went down flawlessly. He knew to land the plane tail first. He knew to accelerate when he needed to. He knew exactly what to do to keep everything intact. And when
the point is, I need to make, is they were selfish. You go up to those guys and say, I want to buy the beer. So listen, you don't have to. I did my job. The military, the same thing. Firemen, police officers, hey, I'm just doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what selfless is all. That's what parents do all the time. My son called me today, and he's a counselor in juvenile hall now, and he's working on his criminal justice degree. He says, Dad, I want to thank you for being so kind to me or helping me. I'm going, whoa, that's my job. Sometimes I got to be hard on you, but you're a good kid. I love you. That's my job. And that's the point being about being selfless.
Mm-hmm.
Let the right hand not know what the left hand's doing. And then you move it along to the next day.
Yeah, yeah. I have a question for you that I was thinking about when I was reading all of your books, and the books that I did read are A Child Called It, The Lost Boy, which was about the foster homes, The Privilege of Youth, A Teenager's Story, and then A Brother's Journey, which your brother wrote from his perspective while he was enlisted to also abuse you, which was a brainwashing that was just a dynamic in your family, and then A Man Called Dave. A Man Named Dave. That was, I mean, every single one of these books were really truthfully, honestly, heartfelt written, and you could just, I mean, I felt all the experiences with you. And I'm just wondering, what was it that gave you the courage to write A Child Called It? What was it that called that forth out of you?
Let's knock that off for a second. It's not courageous to write a tome or you know, something like that. I mean, it's courageous to, again, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you've been doing this for 20 years, and you're getting minimum pay. It's courageous to run into a burning building is courageous to say, you know what, my husband left me or my wife left me, but I still got to go to work and feed the kids. That's courage. It's courage. It's courage right now to say, you know what, worst economy in a long time, and we're at war. Okay, how in the heck am I going to do this? So bottom line is this. What I did, it was supposed to be basically a thank you letter to my teachers.
Hmm.
That book, I'm proud to say, was printed on March 5th, 1993, the 20-year anniversary of my rescue. I'm really a weird duck. I play chess in a little bit. And I wanted the teachers got the first copies of A Child Called It on the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be a thank you letter. And then as a writer, because I was in juvenile hall counseling,
mm-hmm.
I was flying for the Air Force. I had all this training as a youth service worker in the 80s, and I was the odd duck. A lot of my friends in the 80s were going to take back the night.
Mm.
And they kumbaya'd and they took back the night. And abuse is bad, and abuse is bad, and stop the abuse. And that's good, that's good. But they would do it day after. I'm going, okay, when your Bic lighter runs out, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to take it back. I'm going, well, what about resilience? Or what about praising the social workers or the teachers or police officers? What about that campaign?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought as a writer, if I told a story about a kid that didn't quit, because A Child Called It was written not by a 32-year-old counselor,
mm-hmm.
as much it was written by an 8-year-old male. That's why it's very graphic. It's very
mm-hmm.
fast-paced. It's almost like Saving Private Ryan,
mm-hmm.
the movie by Spielberg. He got critiqued the first 20 minutes because, oh, my God, there's blood and there's sounds and it's shot. It's out of aperture. And
mm-hmm.
Spielberg says, you know what? War is hell. Get it? So it's like you can, and it's hard to write when you can get the reader to visualize things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not one word in that book that's over 3 syllables because 8-year-old males don't think in that fashion.
Right.
It's very graphic. It's very fast-paced. It's very curt.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, what if I wrote a thank you letter to my teachers? The main theme was resilience. The subplot was about, okay, here's a middle-class white family. White middle class. The antagonist isn't the drunken man, but the doting den mother.
Mm-hmm.
The doting mother who has all the kids over the house. And we talk about the different dynamics, but the main caveat is that little boy just didn't quit. What I love about that book is, if you remember Hal Roach, the movie director, he directed Laurel and Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
He directed a series called Little Rascals about the bygone depression era, about kids having fun during the depression.
Right.
Hal Roach shot it for those adults who lived in the bygone area, but kids loved it because it was about them. So you have the duality.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never thought that kids would read the book because it's very gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have kids watch Freddy Krueger or Fright Night before they go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was weird when kids would read the book and find out their parents aren't Nazis.
Mm.
It was interesting. I knew the book would take off when this one couple, they had an argument. They didn't talk for 2 or 3 days. And the mother, or this wife, read the book, gave a chapter to her husband. You know, they said, what's our problem? What are we fighting for? That's when I knew we had the connection.
Mm.
It was printed in 93, published in 1995, which was really odd. And then 2 years after that, we made the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And that book is this an anomaly. We were on the New York Times for like over 6 years.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Right.
Well, it's one of those things where it's required reading in schools. And, I mean, look, again, your friend from Emotional Intelligence, she read the book. It's still, my gosh, it's, I mean, I'm proud of the book, but as a writer, I think the best book I ever wrote was The Privilege of Youth because I got to write it in my fashion, my vernacular, my pacing.
Yeah, I got
rather than because if you look at the trilogy series, it's almost like a Star Wars trilogy series.
Mm-hmm.
As the character, the protagonist matures, the vernacular matures from concrete to more abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to see how the characters develop, my mother's character, my father's character, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little deliberate, but there's always a lesson in all the characters, I think, as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, everybody must evolve, and even your mother did on some level, to some degree.
Well, she kind of evolved, but then she really devolved, because, and you look at the, it's very careful, there's what I call threads, and you look at the relationship of her mother.
Yes.
And how her mother was raised in the era of the 1930s in Salt Lake City, Utah, class I teach. Were ladies treated with respect in Salt Lake City 1930s? Not.
Mm-hmm.
Men, dogs, women. Women were objects. I own you.
Yeah.
So my grandmother was in that bygone area. My grandparents divorced. My grandmother was basically exiled from her community and her church.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she was what we call 5150, a little bit psycho there. Now
mm-hmm.
she goes super psycho on my mother and my uncle. Ho-ho. My mother was raised, shh, be quiet, keep thy mouth shut, marry thy man, pop out thy kids, problems will go away. Mm-hmm. And we know that pain and suffering doesn't go away. It's a dormant cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually that cancer is going to evolve, and that's what happened with my mom. So my job is to discover cancer. I may not have the cure for cancer, but at least I can stop it, hopefully, from going from the next generation, and knowledge is power. We didn't talk about sex, politics, religion, race 5-10 years ago as much as we do now. That's why today is such a celebration.
Totally.
And I believe that sometimes, I believe challenge is good.
Yes.
When you're brought down to your knees, and every time you get up and you walk, you go, look at me, I can dance. Oh, my God, I can dance. Hickey Lees. Like
mm-hmm.
I said before, every time I have a meal, what a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
My God, I got to fly for the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to do amazing things because there's a sense of appreciation, and every day is a wonderment for me. The older I get, the more wonderful life gets.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you if you... I know for me, I joined the Army because I wanted to have a sense of family because I didn't really fit in with my own family. So I joined the Army wanting to fit in somewhere and have some kind of a family. And I'm just wondering, when I read about your joining the Air Force, if there was any of that going on for you whatsoever, or was it just you really wanted to serve your country and amount to something?
Well, you know, it's weird. I mean, I would love to say that. I think now I'm a pretty good patriot. I'm kind of like Will Rogers meets Clint Eastwood, you know, when it comes to being a patriot. But I have to tell you the truth, and that is when I joined the Air Force, it was for purely selfish reasons.
Mm.
I was working over 80 to 90 hours a week as a freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I was a high school dropout as a junior just so I can work, because back in my day, when you're 18, hasta la vista, they kick you out. And I didn't want to be homeless like my father was without money. So,
as a foster child, once you age out, 18, that's when you
now
no longer have
different
provisions.
Programs to help them out till they're 23 or 25. It all depends on, you know, what's going on. But back then it was very hardcore, and I thought, you know what, I'm working at 7-Elevens and I'm working at Taco Bell, quick food things.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted stability. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, I started my illustrious career as a field cook, then a cook. Then a
right.
little commando boy. Then eventually I was going to college and had the, I mean, the only reason why I became an air crew member is because I just didn't quit. And
mm-hmm.
everything I've been able to kind of the springboard from my past has always served me well. I have a very strong work ethic, but I have what I call ignorant persistence. If I believe in something, I'm going to do it. I really, really do.
Mm-hmm. That's clear. That's very clear. So, you know, as I'm reading the trilogy and the other couple of books and the one I will be reading, I keep wondering, did you get a degree in counseling or anything like that? Did you?
Well, right now I'm working on criminal justice, but I have a degree. I have a lot of psychology under my belt, a lot.
I'm sure.
But aeronautics and metals is what I'm really probably well known for. And it's kind of weird because I used to give classes on teaching psychology on abuse and so forth, and how to work with kids or perps and peds and stuff like that. And it's just a lot of it is just, you know, who you talk to and so forth. And the problem is I traveled way, way too much. I'm actually, I'm trying to slow down. I really am, for personal reasons now, because I'm at the point I've done for God, I've done for country. Now I'm just going to kind of relax and have a glass of wine and play more piano.
That's good. You still play chess?
Not as much as I used to. I'm trying to play more piano now.
Uh-huh. Yes, I saw a picture of you playing piano. I think that's great. Did you?
Oh, my God. Someone has... You know, it's weird, this darn Internet thing. They snap photos of you. And I think there's a photo of Angelina in me out there, too, by the way, so you have to look out for that one.
Angelina Jolie?
Yeah, she's a very nice girl.
Yes. Well, very good. Now, I want to ask you this question because it was the first thought I had when I finished A Child Called It. Is there any plan to make this book into a movie?
That's why Angelina Jolie and I are talking. She wants to be the producer for the film, actually. We met, I think it was last February, and it was really strange because she was in Baghdad right before she met me. And I thought, oh, my God, she's in Baghdad. We're never going to meet.
Mm.
And then that was Thursday, and she had a jet that shuttled her back, and she actually read that book years ago when she was with her husband, Billy Bob, and something fell through the cracks, and she read it, I think, last year, and she talked, and we met, and you know, we signed a little thing for her. We'll see, because I think with someone like her, it's about how we do the story and
right.
so forth. And it's weird. I believe this. I don't chase anything. If God wants it to happen, it will happen. And I was very kind to her, and she says, Dave, what do you want? I says, well, she offered me a sum of money. I said, no. And she says, not enough. I'm going, no, it's too much. I said to her, here's what I want. When we premiere the film, Everywhere we premiere it, from England to New York to L.A., and Daly City, California, and Palm Springs, of course, mm-hmm. I want to do a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
When we do the grand thing in L.A., I want my teachers invited, my foster parents and social workers, I want them to walk on the red carpet.
Yes.
And we'll raise a lot of money, and we'll give it all to charity. And she was like crying. I'm going, honey, that's how I roll. Let's do it.
Yeah.
But those people are, I mean, they're very nice, because you look at people like Angie and Brad. They work hard. They're very, very blessed. But look what they do with their blessings. I hope your audience is listening. What do you do with your blessings?
Right.
And right now is not a time to be selfish. Right now, I can't, you know, I almost felt bad. I almost wrote him a check. P. Diddy called his friends in OPEC land and says, man, I don't have enough money to finance my jet to get the gas. I'm going, well, P. Diddy, why do you have to spend $3.5 million every single year for your birthday? Why don't you have five friends and take them out to Taco Bell and have a beer and relax?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, what's really important? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Look
well,
at the
there's a psychology behind why people do things like that.
You think?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
And again, you know, you might think you're the big guy on the hill, but gee diddy, my higher power is a little bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing today. There's a joke I do on the radio show. The president-elect, they spent just over $150 million, as they need to, for security and for the pomp and circumstance. I got to see five American heroes today make detective. They were all detectives. Three of them made sergeant and two of them made lieutenants. We only spent $29.95 on that. More bang for the buck, baby.
Right.
Yes, indeedy.
Right. So what I'd like to know next is if you made another one of your books into a film, which one would it be?
Oh, you know, I got to tell you, I'm proud to say that Mr. Spielberg and Mr. Hanks looked at The Privilege of Youth, and again, as a writer, that's my favorite book, because to me, it's not dark, it's a coming-of-age timepiece, and it's really a tribute to mice and men.
Mm.
It's kind of what Wonder Years meets Stand By Me with the Kevin Costner film called Fandango, because I love films, and you look at the pacing of the book, and it's about the 1970s, and when all the kids can play on the block, and you all knew everybody, and it's a bygone era.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in that day, you know, more ladies were at home and so forth, and the men met in their garage. They might have had a beer or a stogie, and, you know, you had that little division there. But there was a cohesiveness of that whole neighborhood safety and security. And to me, it would be a light film, and it's about the breakaway time that you're 17, you're 18, you're discovering yourself, you want to move out and start your own, and the breaking away from family and friends. And it's really, as a writer, I think it's a beautiful, beautiful book, and there's passages that make me laugh and make me cry. And I'm in production right now with book 8, and that's going to be an emotional story as well.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
And then after that, we may hang it up. After that, we'll see. I may have to put myself out to pasture.
Ah, I hope not. Well, I have another question for you, and that is, at what point in your life, because I know from my own experience that someone who goes through what you went through, you just want to fit in, you just want to be accepted, you just to be part of the human race.
Normal.
At what point in your life did you finally realize that you were a part of the human race?
Well, you know what's weird is it kind of comes in, I must say this, and I'm going to, I'm trying to be honest with you, Kate.
I appreciate it.
A lot of people, they think, you know, oh, Dave Pelzer, he's walking on water. Look at Dave Pelzer, everything he touched, Dave Pelzer, he's the man. Well, if I'm the man, how come I'm divorced twice?
Oh, I didn't know
maybe,
that.
Maybe because I worked too hard, and maybe I hate to say this, but I was attracted to people that were of different. I thought, okay, I was married to Stephen's mom, and we both had very similar backgrounds, and we both thought as young children, young kids in our early 20s,
mm-hmm.
you came from a bad situation. I did. So maybe a minus plus a minus is a positive. No, that's not so. Plus, if you're flying for the Air Force, you're out of the country 9 months out of the year.
Right.
And then I married the first lady I dated, and I traveled, and we worked together, and that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've dated other ladies as a divorcee, and I'm going, my God, am I being attracted to my mother's approval here? What's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, you know, you grow older, and you kind of ask yourself, what are you doing, and why are you doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say again and again, you have to be comfortable in your own skin. And you can't chase mom or dad's or other people's approval.
Mm-hmm.
We tell our teens this. We tell our babies this. But sometimes as adults, we think, oh, my God, if I throw a party, P. Diddy, they'll like me.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I do this, they'll accept me. And you just really have to hunker down and accept yourself.
This is exactly true. And I took 2 years out of my life to just become my own beloved and learn to love myself, because the person that I was seeking was in the mirror. It was me. And when I came to terms with that what happened to me was not my fault, and your book helped a great deal with vindicating me from feeling like it was my fault. I don't know if this was true for you, but for me, what happened to me, what hurt me the most about it emotionally was thinking it was my fault, thinking I had caused
well,
it, even though I was a baby.
Because now let's talk a little psychology here, 101. 90% of your makeup, at least 90% of your psychological makeup is the first 8 to 10 years of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to back that up to the first 3 or 4 years about your connection with your mother or your father, but basically your mother is the connection. And then after age 4 to age 8, all the things that you hear, because it's not the physical pain, but when people point that finger and say horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say something else. And I had someone who was a friend of Bill. They're in program. You know, they had demons and they went to program. And this one person said something to me that just changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want everybody to slow down, breathe in,
mm-hmm.
relax, and I'm going to say this carefully. That should have never have happened. Whether it was abuse, whether it was a real bad divorce, if someone deliberately hurt you, listen again,
mm-hmm.
that should have never have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is I release you.
Mm-hmm.
I release you of that shame.
Mm-hmm.
I release you of all that fear, and you know what? Hurt people, Dr. Bill Cosby says, hurt people hurt people. Again,
yes.
Look at the situation for what it was, not what you think it still is,
mm-hmm.
and this will help you to let go and move on.
Right.
My mother was horribly abused by a monster.
Yes.
My mother was raised to keep your mouth shut and marry Mr. Man,
yes.
and she subdued herself with the demon of alcohol. DDD,
mm-hmm.
okay. Now that we can talk about psychology or race or sexuality or finances or religion and blah, 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 we get it all out on the table. We can chop it up and divide it up, and maybe we don't have all the answers. But it's like anything. The more you talk about it, oh, my God, I was only 4. That's not my issue. That's not my issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You go to the bathroom. You flush the toilet. You wash your hands. You walk out of the bathroom. You never think about that stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
Next, get off the cross because someone else can use the wood. Next.
Mm. Right. Now, being that you endured so many beatings, and being that you studied psychology, you understand that when a person is traumatized as a child, that trauma, that energy is like being chased by a tiger, and it stays in your body like 70 miles an hour if you don't process it out, and that becomes post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you find that you've been able to successfully process that trauma out of your body?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I do not walk on water. I'm a pretty smart guy, and like anything, you know, there's peaks and valleys, and a lot of people don't know this, but women change every 7 to 8 years, physically, psychologically, emotionally. Men change every 8 to 12 years, psychologically, physically, emotionally. That's why they say, oh, my God, you're turning 50. Oh, my God. And, you know, and I got to tell you, the last 2 years of my life, because I traveled an awful lot, maybe I was not in the right relationship, you know, it's been really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you the truth, though. I've been seeing a therapist now for ever since I came back from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I've been seeing a therapist, and we just talk about things and going, oh, my God, I'm smart, and I know these things. But it's nice to have positive input.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like anything, whether it's physical therapy or psychological therapy or learning a new piano song, you're off key a little bit, but after a while you stick with it, and you do get better.
Yes.
So a lot of it is, you know, you just have to accept it.
It's mm-hmm.
almost, I look at it this way. And I'm a very simple guy. I'm what they call a combat counselor.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put the Band-Aid on you. I'll give you a shot of B12 in the backside. Okay, move it along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe I was abused for the first 12 years of my life, and that's
mm-hmm.
pretty extensive. But
mm-hmm.
maybe I loved Skippy the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Skippy was with me from age 5 to age 12, and I loved Skippy, dude. But Skippy got hit by a bus right in front of me, and oh, my God, it was traumatic at age 12.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, you know, at age 35, you know, I have another dog or I move on. Or maybe I have an uncle or aunt or a parent, and they passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell kids, you know, especially if they're in their late teens or adults, I miss my dad, then honor thy father
mm-hmm.
and make a decision. What would your father say right now about your decisions about drugs or not applying yourself in school?
Mm-hmm.
And in an awkward sense, you see people that come from broken homes. My brother's a police officer. I was in the military. I'm still of service. I mean, these people that come from these bad situations, they make a conscious or sometimes a self-conscious decision to make things better. Maybe it makes them cleaner and they enjoy life better, but it's always about the helping hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think anyway.
Well, yeah, when you're being of service, you're not thinking about yourself. You're thinking about helping other people. And when you get outside of yourself, it's a wonderful way to love your own self. I mean, giving is truly receiving.
Well, I believe that, but I always believe it because I know what it's like to be the bottom of the barrel, to be less than zero. And I remember one time a teacher touched my shoulder, and I couldn't even talk. I stuttered so much, and I used to write all these answers. And this teacher says, "My David Hercules, he's going to be a writer. You're going to be a writer, David. Look at you." And I thought, oh, my God, you just suck it up like a sponge.
Yes.
You know, it's called 76 to 1 in psychology. For every one negative we receive, males and females, we need 75 to 76 positives just to break even.
Yes.
And if you look at psychology, it's the males that have a very shallow ego. We need to be fed all the time that we're bigger and stronger. And even though I got a big beer belly, I'm still a sexy guy, and I want to be James Bond. Oh, yeah.
Right.
And, you know, and it's women that are more secure than men are. And then you have to ask yourself, why are you, here we go, acting in this manner?
Mm-hmm.
Are you trying to please yourself? Are you trying to get the approval of others? And it's always nice to say, honey, you're beautiful. Honey, you're sexy. Honey, what do you think of this suit? Oh, you look really hot. And those are normal things. But then again, too, is it obsessive compulsive behavior?
Mm-hmm.
And again, no one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's perfect, and no one has the perfect marriage. No one has perfect health. No one got a perfect 401k today. But you know what? Every day is a new day to step up and make a difference.
Right.
Every day.
Right. Do you find that in your speaking engagements, David, and your all the work that you do, basically, that a person's posture and their whole essence shifts when you reassure them that everything's going to be okay?
You know, what's weird is that I have to tell you, I'm probably the weirdest public person there is, because I hate being called a speaker, and I hate being, don't you ever call me a motivational speaker, because those guys are wimps as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say, the first time, it was about a year and a half ago, and what I try to do is see where the audience is going. I do a lot of comedy, and I do like a Dave Letterman monologue, because it cuts up the energy, because they think, oh my God, Dave Pelzer, he's going to be serious, or Dave Pelzer, the child abuse expert. And I did some comedy, and I'm doing my little thing, because there's no script. I don't know what's going to fly out of my mouth. I want to make it raw and impromptu. And
yep.
Every staff member I have, every handler, they go, oh, my God, he just can't help himself. And the first time I said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to do this, because I saw a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm.
Says, folks, that should have never have happened. And I'll never forget, I was in Ocean City, Maryland last year. It was like a five-hour drive, and, you know, it's out in the middle of nowhere. And I did. I couldn't believe I said this. I said, folks, I know that some of you may be going through a divorce. Some of you may have lost a loved one. Maybe one of you, God forbid, you lost a child. And I told them, just listen, I will pray for you. I will keep you in my prayer list. I'm giving you positive energy. I want you to be surrounded by family and friends. And you know what? We're going to get through this. Together, God bless us all, we are going to get through this. And I'll never forget afterwards this, you know, you get hugs and somebody says, oh, yeah, I'm going through a divorce, or oh, my kids drive me crazy. And you just,
mm-hmm.
you know, you give them a joke and you give them a piece of advice. And this elderly black lady comes up, and she had a person on each elbow.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, what's going on? And she just fell in my arms and says, you will not believe this. I buried my son last Monday, and it's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to come, but someone said, I need to come see you. My son said, Mom, I have to die before you do. He was very sickly, and you're going to meet someone, and it's going to be fine. And it's amazing about timing. It's almost like that Mel Gibson film, Signs, Swing
mm-hmm.
Away. I'm saying this to my adult friends, because kids don't understand this. Young adults under the age of 25 cannot comprehend this. If you're over 35, whether you're lonely and you meet someone across the room and you feel that energy, or maybe you meet three strangers and they tell you the same thing, you're going to be fine, or they give you something, or the fact, and I'm a former combat air crew member,
mm-hmm.
20 things should have happened on that flight that should have been devastating. Now, these people walked on the wings. What a lot of people understand is this. Wings are made to be slick, so the air deflects.
Mm-hmm.
No one on those wings slipped, and water is slippery when it's icy. Duh.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. The only mistake they made, unclassified, is someone in the back opened up the aft hatch and water starting to seep in. But that was just a simple mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to say there's signs out there that people you meet and the energy you give them, and I have the honor of maybe saying one thing at that one time, and I can't begin to tell you how many millions of times strangers have come up to me and they say, Dave, you need to do better, or Dave, you need to study, or Dave, I'll try this, or Dave, God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what my director said, Miss Kathy Estes, she's been a director for the Office now for the last 2.5 years. She says, Dave, Dave, you don't understand, any given day, we get 300 calls a day.
Mm-hmm.
We get 4,000 to 5,000 pieces of mail every month.
Mm-hmm.
And half that mail is like prayer list. Dave, you're in my prayers. Dave, you're in my prayers. Or Dave, I saw you. Or Dave, thank you for this. Or Dave, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm going, my gosh. And the power of prayer and the power of inspiration is amazing. Mm-hmm. All you need is a little bit of hope. If you believe in yourself that you can get by the next minute,
mm-hmm.
friends of Bill say, we got to pray to make it today, and I believe in that. But sometimes, if you can just get through that 1 minute, I used to count backwards from 60, and it was really hard when I'm 8 years old, and the pain was so bad. And after 5 minutes, I'm going, well, the pain's bad, but it's not as bad as it was 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get by minute, or hour by hour, even day by day, it is going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a common sense approach. People are ghastly overweight. You know, if you take this pill, free the payments of 1995, you lose 5,000 pounds and you'll be sexy by tomorrow. No. No, no, no. Hey, I want to play the lotto. There's people that are suing the lottery because they're not millionaires. How stupid is that?
Yeah.
You look at people that have a good relationship. They have a good relationship because they work on it every single day.
Right.
People save $5 a day and they don't spend $100 a day on all that fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People who get A's. You know, the best kids? One of the best school districts we have in Southern California is Arcadia High School. We have Asian kids, African-American kids, Hispanic kids. You know, it's amazing. These kids, as a sophomore, are taking college credit classes.
Mm-hmm.
80% of the work is done by 20% of the workforce. Why? They focus their time and how they manage their energy. Da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
People say, Dave, you have a radio show, you travel, you do military work, you're writing books, you work 18 hours a day. Yeah, I get everything done. And when I'm off duty, I'm going to sit on my butt and have a glass of wine and play my piano. Leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a manage of committing to a cause.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that with your lifestyle and the way that you grew up, all things as they happened, that emotional intimacy is an easy thing for you or a difficult thing for you?
Oh, God, man. Are we on Oprah? God.
No.
Go to Oprah. Emotional intimacy, you know, it was, I'll be quite frank, as a young man, I had of course there were challenges, emotional intimacy. My biggest thing is trust.
Yes, I
understand.
Everybody
say, oh, you know, like, oh, Dave, it's like anything, you know, people, a good friend will take the bus when the limo is broken. So by that I mean like, oh, Dave, you know, you're nice to me, I like you, and if things aren't nice, they bail on you, whether friends or business.
Yeah.
So trust is more important than intimacy, because anybody can be, and intimacy is not about sex. Intimacy
no.
is me about bringing someone in your inner circle, whether it's your home or having dinner or just being friends with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take it to the next level, whether it's a relationship or whether it's a marriage or intimacy and sex and so forth. I mean, that's really kind of hard, and I'm just kind of aware, because I've been embezzled a few times.
Mm.
I had friends, business friends, that say they were friends, and they'd take money and run.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, okay, let's try to work this out. But
mm-hmm.
I'm at the point that I'm very careful who I select now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like because I didn't date in my 20s or have a lot of dealings in my 20s, at age 20 I was probably going on 30.
Mm-hmm.
I was working 40 hours a week in junior high. I mean, that's no life to live.
Right.
But I'm more aware of things now, you know, and I'm taking it day by day. Because
mm-hmm.
if someone says, oh, my God, Dave, I love you. Okay, let's get married. I'm not going to do that now. Or, Dave, you're the best author. We'll sign this contract. I signed one of the worst publishing contracts in history. But, you know, I'm a little bit older and wiser now.
Right. I know that you did get your book wasn't even actually published for a time with that situation that happened when you were trying to be actually to go out and speak to people, because that was what it was in your heart, but you never got called. And it was because I forget exactly how the story goes, but that is one of the times where you really got taken advantage of, and that did not stop you.
Well, you know what's weird is that, you know, I really believe that things, particularly at the age of 30 or 40, if you're a good person and you got good karma, things will settle. It's almost like a divorce. Oh, my ex-wife this, my ex-wife that. And people, they down their exes. Well, that's your former lover, your former husband, for number one. Two, let the horses run the race. If your side of the street is clean, if you have a good heart, you're going to be fine. You'll find love again. You know, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're out there going, blah, 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 blah. I have a friend of mine. She's been divorced for 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls up twice a year, and she talks about her ex this, her ex that, and I hate my ex. I'm going, Sandy, how long were you married? 8 years, 8 years. How long have you been divorced? I've been divorced for 25 years. How come I can't get a date? Honey, I have no idea.
Well, she's carrying around her ex-husband with her.
Well, you think?
Yeah, he's still
all
carrying
negative
him.
Negative energy, but again, if you know, if you kind of, I mean, it's normal. You have the seven signs. You have denial and hate and anger and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? The sooner you can keep your side of the street clean, the sooner you accept things for what they were, not what you think they still are, it's going to come back to you. So I've always been lucky. And the fact, too, that, you know, oh my God, I'm starting my life all over again. You know, I have someone in my life right now, and it's amazing. And we're doing it step by step.
Wonderful. That's the way it's done. Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And that took a lot of inner work on your part to expect something like that.
It was luck. And I think it's the first relationship where I don't have to rescue anybody.
Yay.
Ho-ho.
Wonderful.
Ho-ho.
Yes. That now there's some more time for you to get to know you. So
well, at the same time, a lot of people that come from broken situations, broken homes, they have a tendency, okay, if I save the world and I save God and I get that whole thing, and if I save my lover, my wife, my best friend, and they kind of give a lot of themselves away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to be in a relationship that it is, I call 60-40 or 50-50, that you're evenly yoked.
Because mm-hmm.
otherwise resentment's going to build.
Totally.
And after a year or so, it's like, oh, my God, these cracks will become crevices. And again, it's all about communication. If you're over 40, what in the hell are you saving yourself for? If you have something to say, say it.
Say it, yes. And we're at the last minute of the Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I told you it would go by fast. And I just want to add that upward spiral relationships where you set one another up to win, whether it's business, life, personal, romantic, whatever it is, that is what the template is possible to have in your life, and it sounds like you're discovering that. I know I have it. I want to thank you, David Pelzer, for all you're doing. I'm not saying you're walking on water, but I want you to know that this one person talking to you now acknowledges you for the goodness that you've brought to my life and the understanding of what happened to me through reading what happened to you. And
well,
it's no small thing.
And I want to thank you, ma'am, for all the work that you're doing, inspiring others and encouraging others to reach beyond the limit. And that's what America needs to do, is be steadfast, believe they can make it today, and help our brothers and sisters along the way. We
absolutely
are,
and to go from impossible
on that shining hill for all the world to see and come home to.
Yep, and to go from impossible to I'm possible. And with that, I'll say good night. Thank you, everyone, for listening. David, have a great evening, and, you know, I hope you'll stay in touch with us.
God bless. Call us anytime, sweetheart.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.